probably the reason why these journalists were arrested is because they were reporting on what they have saw, what they have seen in relation to this massive human tragedy.
The UN Secretary General calls for a solution to the Rohingya crisis. It's Friday, December 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of our program. Join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, Doctors Without Borders issues a scathing report on the Rohingya crisis. Sri Lanka signs an international treaty against landmines. And what is the future of Pakistan's Sindh province? That's all on today's VOA Asia. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Thursday that the arrest of two Reuters journalists in Myanmar is a signal that press freedom is shrinking in the country. Speaking in Japan, Guterres also expressed his concern over human rights violations in Rakhine State, saying the journalists were probably arrested because they were reporting on what they have seen in relation to what he called a massive human tragedy.
It is clearly a concern in relation to the erosion of press freedom in the country, but let's be frank, my main concern is in relation to the dramatic violations of human rights that occurred in the country and led to the 600,000 people being forced to flee the country. And probably the reason why these journalists were arrested is because they were reporting on what they have saw, what they have seen in relation to this massive human tragedy.
Journalists Hua Lone and KCO were arrested late Tuesday in the main city of Yangon. They were charged with violating the Official Secrets Act. The journalists allegedly planned to send important security documents regarding security forces in Rakhine State to foreign agencies abroad, according to the government's Myanmar press council. Walone's wife told VOA Burmese that the family has received no information about her husband's condition. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson said that the British government has communicated with the Myanmar government, but is still moving cautiously.
We have already expressed our grave concerns to the Burmese government, to the government in Naypyidaw, as you would expect. On sanctions, clearly it's a very difficult situation at the moment. We don't want to do anything to entrench or intensify the power of the generals, as opposed to the democratic government represented by Aung San Suu Kyi. So it's a difficult balance that we're trying to strike. But clearly we are committed to freedom of speech and people's ability to report the facts and bring into the public domain what is happening in Rakhine.
UN Secretary General Guterres said that the international community needs to act not only to secure the journalists' freedom, but also to solve the crisis in Rakhine State.
I think it's important that the international community does everything possible to allow not only for the journalists to be released, and the freedom of press is very important, but also to allow, for those reasons that might justify or might have justified the reason the reasons of the arrest to disappear, which means for humanitarian aid to be effectively delivered, for violence to be effectively contained, for reconciliation to be promoted, and for the right of return of this community to be fully respected and implemented.
The Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh say their exodus from mainly Buddhist Myanmar was triggered by a military counteroffensive in response to Rohingya militant attacks on security forces in Rakhine State at the end of August. Meanwhile, the relief group Doctors Without Borders says at least 6,700 Rohingya Muslims were killed in the first month of a brutal army crackdown on rebels. The Geneva-based international aid group, commonly known by its French acronym MSF, said Thursday that it came up with its estimate after conducting a survey of several Rohingya refugee camps in Bangladesh. Natalie Roberts is the head of emergency operations for MSF.
We did this survey at the beginning of November, and what we found was quite striking was since the 25th of August, for 1 month since the 25th of August, there was a very high mortality rate amongst the Rohingya, particularly mortality by violence. So what we actually found is in the month between the 25th of August and 25th of September, that 9,000 Rohingya died, but of those, 70% were killed by violence, actually. So we found that 6,700 Rohingya were actually killed in Myanmar during that period of time.
Robert says that the level of violence ran the gamut from shootings, mass killings, sexual violence, burning of houses and villages.
There were many different episodes of violence. So what happened was people were saying that military soldiers, armed militias would come to their villages. Some people would say that they would then come and shoot people, individuals or in groups, but also that then there was set elements of sexual violence that was occurring as well. Or they would set fire to the houses, so the people living inside those houses would be burned to death. Individuals were beaten. So the stories came out with a general theme of extreme violence and a sort of systematic violence against people within different villages.
Roberts says the group's estimated death toll includes at least 1,000 children below the age of 5. Myanmar's military has been accused of launching a scorched earth campaign against Rohingya villages in northwestern Rakhine State in August in response to attacks on Myanmar police outposts. The campaign has led to a mass exodus of more than 600,000 Rohingyas into neighboring Bangladesh. There, they told human rights groups of serious atrocities committed by government forces, including random shootings, rapes, and the burning down of homes and entire villages. These are the top stories trending on VOANews.com. China accuses U.S. of meddling over potential U.S. Navy visits to Taiwan. The U.S. presses Thailand to downgrade ties with North Korea. South Korean President Moon is in China on a visit to repair ties with Beijing. India orders movie moguls to avoid the Weinstein effect. And Pakistan reports rare progress in tense ties with Afghanistan. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is available on Facebook and on VOA Asia at the VOANews.com website. Thanks for being with us. I'm David Byrd in Washington, and VOA Asia continues. Sri Lanka has become the 163rd country to join the Mine Ban Treaty, which prohibits the use, production, stockpiling, and transfer of landmines that nations have deemed as barbaric. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, campaigners say Sri Lanka's accession to the treaty will boost efforts to create a mine-free world by 2025.
Campaigners hope Sri Lanka's accession to the Mine Ban Treaty will inspire the last three South Asian holdouts, Pakistan, Nepal, and India, to join the convention. Firoz Alizada is campaigns and communications manager of the International Campaign to Ban Landmines. He tells VOA Sri Lanka's decision to join the convention adds to the global stigma against landmines and will help reduce the number of civilian casualties within the country from this inhumane and indiscriminate weapon.
This decision would hopefully help Sri Lanka to speed up and clear and destroy those landmines, and also provide assistance to that significant number of landmine victims in the country.
Alizada says landmines have killed and maimed more than 22,000 people in Sri Lanka over the years. The Landmine Monitor 2017, which was published Thursday, says Myanmar and Syria were the only countries that used landmines during the past year. Alizada says neither state is party to the treaty.
The Myanmar armed forces used landmines on the country's border with Bangladesh, which we have condemned because the landmines that were used and they were basically targeting Rohingya fleeing the country. And landmines were also used in Syria.
The Monitor reports more than 8,600 mine casualties last year, including at least 2,089 killed. This is the highest number of annual casualties recorded since 1999. It cites Yemen, Libya, Afghanistan, Myanmar, and Ukraine as the countries with the most casualties. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. UN envoy Nikki Haley says that evidence proves Iran is violating international law by funneling missiles to Houthi rebels in Yemen. Haley said that missiles recently launched at Saudi Arabia from Houthi-controlled territory in Yemen were put there by Iran. Iran's mission to the UN says the displayed weapons are fabricated and the accusations are baseless. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Pakistan's Sindh province has long been known for its inclusive culture, where people not only tolerate other faiths, but also celebrate them. However, as VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports, with the rise of more conservative Islamic madrasas, that culture is slowly eroding.
The shrine of Lal Shehbaz Qalandar, one of the most famous Sufi saints in the region, is almost universally revered in Pakistan's Sindh province. Hindus and Muslims, Shiites and Sunnis all come here to pay homage. Legend says the daily ritual of beating large drums at sunset and dancing to the beat has been going on for 700 years. Earlier this year, a massive suicide blast shook this shrine, killing at least 80 people. The Islamic State took responsibility. The attack, one of many on various holy places in the last few years, is an indicator the inclusive, tolerant culture of Sindh is changing.
Previously, Sunni and Shiites were all together. There were no differences. In the last 10 years, things have changed. People are scared of each other.
The province is home to 90% of the Hindus living in Pakistan. During the past 3 to 4 decades, many have migrated from here.
The main reason is that our girls are being kidnapped and forced to change their religion. This fear is forcing parents or relatives of girls to leave the country.
Many activists blame the erosion of Sindh's tolerant traditions on the spread of an orthodox version of Islam. Like the rest of the country, Sindh has seen a mushroom growth of large and small madrasas.
Traditionally, Sindhis used to practice a folksy form of religion, and now we see more madrasas and scholars and clerics and their Islam. And in Pakistan, unfortunately, the orthodox form of Islam is very sectarian and is based on differences and conflict.
Pakistan's National Internal Security Policy, presented to the parliament in 2014, said some of the country's thousands of madrasas are spreading extremism. Reportedly, 20% of the more than 10,000 madrasas in Sindh province have been recently shut down. Until now, the centuries-old spirit of Sindh has resisted the trend. The day after the deadly attack on the Shehbaz Qalandar shrine, the musicians beat their drums and people danced again. But will they dance for another 700 years? Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Sindh.
And remember, if you'd like to see video on any of these stories, log on to our Facebook page, that's VOA Asia, or visit us at voanews.com. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in and Chinese President Xi Jinping on Thursday called for efforts to improve the two countries' relationship and reaffirm their position to peacefully end North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the top stories of the day and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. The 1.3 million people who live in Mongolia's capital city of Ulaanbaatar breathe the dirtiest city air in the world. It's a public health nightmare, and winter means that face masks, asthma, and pneumonia become part of daily life. As VOA's Kevin Enix reports, there is a solution, but it requires changing an ancient way of life for nearly half of the city's residents.
In most big cities, the major polluters are cars. But in Mongolia's capital, Ulaanbaatar, the culprit is coal. Burned-in gurs, as they are called, these traditional homes are off the grid. It's an ancient way of life, but it's also filling the air with dangerous and unhealthy particulate matter.
My kids get sick too often because of air pollution. It is so difficult to breathe in this smoke, especially early in the morning and in evenings.
In the winter, more than half of the city's 1.3 million residents stay warm by burning coal and even plastic and rubber tires. That makes Mongolia's capital the most polluted city in the world.
Our school does not have air purifiers. I hope in future the government will provide them.
A government study blames pollution for thousands of deaths every year.
Between 2004 and 2014, the range for this one decade, cases of respiratory infections and cardiovascular disease, both are leading causes of morbidity and mortality in Mongolia, have been doubled.
There's an increased chance children here will develop asthma or get pneumonia. The risks are high for pregnant women as well.
There was a 3.6 times increase in miscarriages and stillbirth if you compare warm months to winter months.
But solutions are hard to come by.
Lack of affordable housing is the main issue, and obviously the only solution to the air pollution, that is to move people from the gear districts into apartments where electricity is provided, heating is provided from the central.
But an estimated 62% of Ulaanbaatar's population live in gurs, making it unlikely the problem will be solved anytime soon. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
We have this news update. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Thursday said he will run in the 2018 presidential elections as an independent candidate. He said he expected the widespread support of Russia's citizens. Putin's approval ratings top 80%, and he's expected to win an easy victory in the March 18th vote. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Every year, hundreds of the most famous names in high tech gather on the campus of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, for the MTech conference. As Yevgeny Maslov and Bob Lavaroni report, MTech is an opportunity to discover future trends in technology that will drive the new global economy.
For the IT community, MTech's annual conference at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology is an event equal to the Hollywood Academy Awards. Guests in the past have included the founders of Google and Facebook.
We talk about those technologies that matter and will have a biggest impact on society. And it is an opportunity for our editors to put our stories on stage and bring them to life.
The MIT Technology Review is the most authoritative voice in the global debate about technologies that can change the planet. Articles in this journal give readers an early look at technology and innovation to determine which ideas will be the most exciting for future development. One of this year's main topics has been artificial intelligence and the impact of related technologies on the economy, and also the social and ethical aspects associated with them. Chris Hammond is the head of the research department of the American company Narrative Science, which is engaged in the field of artificial intelligence.
I think artificial intelligence is still in its nascent phase. That is that we have some systems that are kind of intelligent in certain areas, but that we don't have anything that looks like human intelligence or super intelligence or anything we would ever even vaguely be afraid of.
Hammond's colleague, Stanford University professor Andrew Ang, believes the speed of technology development in artificial intelligence is able to get ahead of expectations and change the whole industry very soon.
I think artificial intelligence is the new electricity. About 100 years ago, the rise of electrification transformed every major industry, everything from healthcare, communications, transportation, manufacturing. I think AI, artificial intelligence today, has advanced to the point where we see a surprisingly clear path for it to also transform every industry.
Interest in the MTech conference is growing every year. Together with international partners, the MIT Technology Review has recently hosted similar conferences in Singapore and in France. Earlier MTech conferences introduced advancement in social media, and in a few years those ideas conquered the world. This year's discussions about artificial intelligence may be the guideline for future development in that area. The MTech conference may soon be called the barometer of technology. For Evgeny Maslov, I'm Bob Leveroni, VOA News. For most of you, this is the early morning, if you're listening to our program, and maybe you like to start the day with a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Maybe you like a mocha coconut frappuccino, or perhaps a frozen frapp. Or maybe you'd like a peppermint mocha, a gingerbread latte, an iced Constantine coffee, a vanilla iced coffee, a chocolate chip creme frappuccino. Or maybe you just like some dark, strong coffee like I do. Well, you might have heard it before, but there's some new research that confirms that coffee is actually healthy for you. Now, that's coffee, not an iced caramel macchiato or a white chocolate mocha. But some of the other habits that we often undertake with the ritual drinking of coffee, and who doesn't like a good snack with their cup of joe, are not all that healthy. VOA's George Pootich explains.
Perhaps the best demonstration of coffee's impact worldwide happened recently in Shanghai, in tea-drinking China, where the U.S.-based chain Starbucks opened its largest shop, taking up 2,700 square meters and employing more than 400 people. While the shop's popularity is not just for coffee's health benefits, a new study says they are indisputable.
There are some headline benefits, such as a lower risk of dying from any cause, a lower risk of dying from heart disease and stroke, and a lower risk of developing heart disease in the first place. And for those outcomes, the maximum benefit was around 3 to 4 cups of coffee per day.
Analyzing results of 201 previous studies about coffee's impact, researchers at the University of Southampton's Faculty of Medicine found that drinking coffee also lowers the risk of developing diabetes, liver disease, dementia, and even some cancers. The only exception was for pregnant women or those who are prone to bone fractures. But scientists point out the research was only about coffee, not what goes along with it.
It's not about the sugar and the syrups and the biscuits, cakes and pastries. And we'd urge people who are already drinking moderate amounts of coffee, about 3 or 4 cups per day mark, to enjoy it, but try and make it as healthy as possible, because standard health messages still apply to those other things.
The greatest benefit was in fighting liver diseases, so researchers are planning a clinical test of using coffee as a treatment for cirrhosis. But for some coffee lovers, there may be another circumstance that carries additional benefits: drinking coffee with pets around.
Pets are not only good for our health, but they can be good for our wealth, particularly if you have them in a small business environment where customers are going to be drawn in to interact with the dog or come in, and it's a really good icebreaker.
Private coffee shop owners take note. Having a pet in your cafe may benefit your business as well as your customers. George Pootich, VOA News.
And I guess that rules out a banana scone with my eggnog latte this time of year. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes, and we're also on SoundCloud. If you'd like, you can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. Also, be sure to let us hear from you. Tell us what you think of our program by logging on to VOA Asia Facebook and send us an email. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks also to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aidan Okut. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.